Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Now, a debate about the fluoride in your public water supply. There's a good chance that you live in one of about 140 Massachusetts cities or towns that adds fluoride to the drinking water. Communities across the country have been doing it for the past 70 years or so to help prevent tooth decay in children and in adults. The American Dental Association and the World Health Organization favor fluoridation of water, and the Centers for Disease Control calls it one of the 10 great public health achievements of the last century. But not everybody thinks it's a good idea. Activists in Newburyport, Rockport, and Gloucester are organizing to stop water fluoridation programs, hoping to join a number of other Massachusetts towns that have ended the practice. And last night, folks came together in Cambridge to talk about the risks and benefits of the practice. So listeners, we're going to be talking about that for the next few minutes. We want to hear from you. Do you live in a town that adds fluoride to the water? Is your city a place that has opted out of adding fluoride to the water? Are you for it or against it? Are you surprised that we're still debating this after almost seven decades of doing it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. In a moment, we're going to hear two views about the science behind this issue. But first, I want to welcome Tracy Ritchie into the conversation. She runs the Gloucester chapter of the Cape Ann Fluoride Action Network, an anti-fluoridation group pushing for an end to this practice. And Tracy Ritchie, welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So what's behind your push to end fluoridation in your town? What's wrong with it?
Well, the problem is, like, well, for years, of course, you hear fluoride, you think, well, it's good for your teeth. And I did as well. I thought that for many years. And my sister initiated in Rockport, and I took a look at what she was doing, and I took a look at the science, and I said, whoa, this is, like, really not what I thought it was. And I came to the conclusion for myself that, you know, this seems to have a lot of risks involved.
What kind of risks are you worried about?
Well, the fact that it is, one, it's an industrial waste byproduct. You know, fluoridationists will say that they're simply adjusting what's naturally occurring in the water, and that would be calcium fluoride that you find in your water. What they add is sodium fluoride, so that's a completely different substance. And so the risks involved that I believe are involved are that it does cross the brain, the blood-brain barrier.
All right, we're going to get into the science of some of this in a little bit. But let me ask you this, Tracy. You know, we just mentioned that this is a practice that has been researched, supported by everyone from the World Health Organization to the American Dental Association to the Centers for Disease Control. I mean, do you really think all of those doctors and scientists have gotten it that wrong?
Well, no, it's not that they've gotten it wrong. For me, you know, you can argue the science both sides. I think each side has an argument, and you can argue it till the cows come home. For me, though, what it comes down to is when I have a medication, if a doctor prescribes me medication, I look at that medication. What are the side effects? How does this affect my body? And I make a choice whether or not I'm going to take that medication or not. So when I looked at fluoride, and I saw that there were risks involved, that there was questionable whether it was beneficial to ingest fluoride. I don't have a problem with people using fluoride. It's readily available if they want to use it. It's right there. You can brush your teeth. You spit it out. It's fine. You can have fluoride tablets if you want. But when you put it in the drinking water, it's literally impossible not to be exposed to fluoride. And they are putting it in the water to treat a disease. Tooth decay.
Right. So your objection is that you're essentially being treated by fluoride whether you want it or not.
Correct. It takes away my medical freedom of choice.
Medical freedom of choice. So you're hoping to organize a ballot initiative in your town to stop the practice. How's that going?
That's going really well. We did a public hearing in front of our city council, and they were very receptive to our thoughts. And we are basing our initiative on the freedom of choice. Because we're not saying no one should have fluoride. We're just saying give us a choice to have it or not. And so it is in the committee right now to go on the ballot for this November in 2015.
All right.
Well, so we were very, very successful with the city council, and I applaud them for their efforts in doing that.
All right. Well, Tracy Ritchie of the Cape Ann Fluoride Action Network in Gloucester, thanks very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good luck to you. So let's turn now to two experts provide some medical and scientific background to all of this. Joining us here in the studio is Philippe Grandjean. He's an adjunct professor of environmental health at Harvard School of Public Health and the head of the research unit at the University of Southern Denmark. Welcome to Radio Boston, Philippe Grandjean. Good to have you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Also with us from San Francisco is Howard Pollack. He's a professor of health sciences at the University of California School of Dentistry. He's also the chair of the Fluoridation Advisory Committee at the California Dental Association Foundation. And thank you, Howard Pollack. Good of you to join us.
Glad to join you, Anthony. Thank you.
And Professor Pollack, I'll start with you. What does the science and decades of research say about the safety of adding fluoride to drinking water?
Well, there's been 70 years of experience since the initial community trials in 1945 in Grand Rapids, Newburgh, New York, and other places demonstrated that they were trying to simulate what naturally occurs in some communities, that is an optimal concentration of fluoride in the water, which at that time was considered to be about one part per million, 1 milligram per liter, very small concentration. And it had a profound effect on reducing the severity and burden of tooth decay for the community. And so that was simulated in these community trials and found to be very, very effective and without any consequences to health. And so that practice now occurs with about three quarters of the American public that's served by public water systems, and that's over 200 million people in this country.
And you heard Tracy Ritchie there from Gloucester concerned about side effects. We'll get into this sort of discussion about freedom of choice, but is she right to have concerns about side effects in your view?
Well, I think that people are getting a lot of information with the internet and the Fluoride Action Network, which is dedicated to opposing fluoridation. But there's a lot of authoritative resources on the internet, the Centers for Disease Control. You've mentioned some of them in your presentation. And when they look at the safety, the potential risks, at that concentration, there really isn't there really isn't a risk to health, and this has been confirmed with the report in 2006 that looked to fluoride in water from the National Research Council at the request of the Environmental Protection Agency, and they did not find any health concerns at the level that we're talking about, which is very important to consider levels. The concentration. Certainly, if there's very, very high concentrations of fluoride in water, you can maybe have some problems. But at the way it's controlled with water fluoridation, there are no problems.
All right. Well, let me turn to you, Professor Grandjean, here in the studio. What do you make of this notion that the science is pretty much settled, that we've had 70 years of fluoridation, that it's doing a number against tooth decay, and that the risk to public health is very, very small or non-existent?
What I make out of it is that science is dynamic and science changes. We're learning all the time. And just because we did studies over 70 years, it doesn't mean that we did everything that is necessary for us to know for sure that fluoridation is not toxic to some process in the body or development of the brain, whatever it is.
Right.
And those studies have actually not been done.
Right. And do I have this right that you've looked into fluoride, the effects of fluoride on the developing human brain?
I have.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. You see, I've been studying human brain development in regard to exposures to lead, mercury, pesticide, solvents. And when I started looking at the fluoride literature in connection with the National Research Council's report on fluoride a few years ago, then I thought, hey, there's a stone we haven't turned here. Mm-hmm. We got to look into that. And I then worked with the most prominent scientists in China where studies have been done. And in communities where children have stayed all of their lives, actually before conception, exposed to the same amounts of fluoride in drinking water at different levels. And I think the number was 27 studies, and all of that in concert suggested that children exposed to higher levels were losing an average of 7 IQ points compared to those exposed to low amounts of fluoride.
All right. So just so that I have this absolutely clear, exposed to higher levels versus lower levels, how does that compare to the levels that are in the average drinking water supply?
Right. Most of them were higher. Not all, but most of them were higher. And all I'm saying is that neuroscience has told us during the last 10 years or so that the development of that very, very complex organ that we call the brain, and which is unique to us humans, that development is excruciatingly sensitive to toxic chemicals.
Yeah.
And we've learned from lead, we don't even know what a safe dose of lead is, because with time we've been able to determine that there are adverse effects on the brain, even at very, what we think is very low exposures to lead.
Yeah.
And so what I urge is that, and I've talked to CDC about it, I've talked to WHO about it, because I used to be on WHO's expert committee on fluoride, and I think we really got to turn this tone and figure out, is it safe, like Dr. Politics says?
All right, so Dr. Pollack, let me turn back to you, because I'm in the middle here. I'm completely in the role of average citizen. I've got kids. I listen to you, and I think, of course, I want them to have water treated with fluoride. I don't want them to get cavities. I listen to Dr. Grandjean, and I rethink that and think, well, I don't know. I mean, he says that there's stuff we don't know about this. Now I'm worried.
I'm sorry that you're worried. but I think that Professor Grandjean has highlighted something that is important, and that is that the studies that he got from China and elsewhere found that at higher levels, there might have been a problem compared to lower levels. In fact, the lower levels where we are sort of comparable in terms of what we have in the United States with fluoridation actually showed that was not affected, that IQ was not affected by those lower levels. So I think it's, you know, a basic toxicological principle that it's not the substance that causes the problem, but it's the dose or concentration. We've known that for centuries. Hmm. And that is a very, very key point. And that's why we control the concentration of fluoride in water, because every water system has some naturally occurring fluoride. We want to make sure that it's at the optimum concentration for the benefit of dental health.
All right. Philip Grandjean.
We know very well that the dose makes a poison, but the point is that the lowest of the highly exposed children were quite similar to fluoridation levels. So we are in that range, and I know that Health and Human Services in Washington has recently recommended that we decrease the level from 1 ppm to 0.7. I think we ought to do that right away because it's recognized by the experts around the world that we don't need as much as Cambridge, for example, is adding to drinking water. And then we got to follow this very carefully with CDC, hopefully doing studies that can calm down our worries. I really hope that you're right, but I want to be sure. I can't just trust your judgment, because I've worked in this field long enough to know that with time we have always found that lead, mercury, pesticides, etc., were more toxic than we thought. And I am not willing to sit here and say, okay, let's expose the next generation's brains and just hope the best.
But here's a really basic question. What about toothpaste?
I think toothpaste is a perfect way of exposing the teeth to fluoride where the fluoride is needed. We don't need to absorb fluoride into our bloodstream where it can be carried to the brain.
I see. So that's sort of I think that's the answer to the question I was looking for. In other words, it's different to sort of apply it to your teeth and actually have it coming into our drinking water. We're going to ingest less fluoride.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Can I say a couple of things?
Yes, please do. And then I want to encourage, we've got a couple of listeners that want to get in on this conversation, but go ahead, Dr. Pollack.
Okay, so one point that I think Professor Grandjean and I agree on is the proposed recommendation by HHS to go to 0.7 parts per million. because there is extraneous fluoride sources these days. Children, unfortunately, swallow, young children swallow fluoride toothpaste. Fluoride toothpaste, remember, is 1,000 parts per million of fluoride. And the recommendation is to spit it out. Well, young children can't do that very well. They can't spit, so we recommend a very small pea-sized or even a smear of fluoride toothpaste on the child's toothbrush when they are very young. Hmm. That's very, very important.
Right. Let's take a couple of calls. We're at 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255 to get involved in this fluoride discussion, fluoridation of public water supplies, that is. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Gloucester. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I've been looking at this in depth for the past few months, more depth than I ever wanted to go into. But I do like research and I do like analysis, and I have read the NRC report more than once and looked at the PubMed publications. And when you say that the NRC said that it was safe and all of that, that's not quite true. They said that there were no studies done on lower levels, and there were no studies showing the lowest observed effect level. The NRC also said that there is really concern that optimally fluoridated communities, that's like in Cambridge or in Gloucester or Rockport or Newburyport, at one part per million, you could be, it could be reasonable to anticipate that susceptible populations, such as those with kidney disease, which is approximately 15% of the population, or those with immuno...
Karen, I'm going to just urge you to get to the point only because we've got a couple of other folks to listen to get to. But do you have a question or do you want to just wrap up your point?
I just want to wrap up my point is that 15% of the population shouldn't be drinking fluoride because it is known to worsen or cause allergies. It's not that you're allergic to fluoride, but it worsens those situations. 15% of the population with kidney issues can have their kidneys affected. And a 2014 study came out and said, one part per million does destroy kidneys.
All right, Karen, I'm going to give Howard Pollack a chance to respond because you put a lot on the table, and I don't want to get too down into the weeds of some of these medical discussions. But Howard Pollack, respond to Karen because she put a lot of ideas on the table there.
With regard to kidney disease, the National Kidney Foundation has a website, and you can find the information there that they say that people with kidney disease, chronic kidney disease, can drink fluoridated water. They say that people who don't have kidney disease can drink fluoridated water. It's not going to cause kidney problems. The issue with people who have chronic kidney disease is maybe in dialysis. And when they go through a dialysis, essentially the blood is washed with gallons of water. And there they have to use deionized water for many, many reasons. I don't buy the statement that 15% of the American public is at risk from fluoridated water.
All right. Well, Philip Grandjean, we literally have 15 seconds left. I just want to ask this final question. I remember this debate raging in Massachusetts when I was a kid. I'm not going to tell you exactly how many years ago that was, but it was decades ago. This goes on and on. How so? Why so?
Well, you know, as I said before, times are changing, and we live in a different era than those old studies that were done on fluoridation and where no adverse health effects were found. Today, I look at this as mega dosing. This is like aerial spraying of huge amounts of fluoride where just a tiny bit is reaching the target.
All right. That's Philip Grandjean. He's an adjunct professor of environmental health at Harvard School of Public Health. And Howard Pollack, professor of health sciences at the University of California School of Dentistry. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for helping us sort through this today. I'm very grateful.
Thank you, Anthony. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.